Hello, everyone. Welcome to episode 50 of NBA Unwrapped. I'm Corbin Weinerman, joined by Perry Aston and Max Arzen. Guys, how are you doing?
What's going on, guys?
What's happening, everybody? Excited for episode 50?
Yes. Yeah, it's pretty crazy we've gotten this far.
It's a big deal. Episode 50, Corbin and I have been doing this for a couple years now.
Yeah, I think it's been almost 2 years.
I think it's been over 2 years. It's been quite a ride.
It's been a while.
Almost 2 years. Yeah, no, I think it might
have started Summer League 2 years ago, so exactly. Almost 2 years. Yeah.
It's right around there. That's insane. And speaking of Summer League, Corbin and I will be there this year and covering it live. Yes, so that would
along
be
with Christian.
That's gonna be a lot
I
of
guess
fun
we'll
you.
Call that our celebratory trip for this milestone for us.
I mean, we'd be going either way, but yeah, let's package it together. Sure.
Exactly.
Sure, why not? So yeah, a lot of stuff's been happening around the NBA. Before we get to all of it, want to remind you guys to go ahead and follow us on Twitter at NBA Unwrapped. Follow me on Twitter at Corbin Unwrapped. Perry on Twitter at Perry Aston. And Max on Twitter at Party Max. And that's with an
Party
I.
Party Max with an I.
Yes, an I, not a Y.
Yeah.
Still remember that. And also make sure to either listen to our podcast on podcast.com or on the Apple iTunes podcast app. If you are on the iTunes podcast app and you give us a 5-star review, we really appreciate that. It just helps us continue to grow our brand. Make sure to check out our website, unwrappedsports.com. We have a lot of partner podcasts that have been teaming up with us. Perry, I'll let you talk a little bit more about that.
Yeah, it's been a fun time at Unwrapped. A lot of growth here, including Corbin, me, Christian, and everyone else, contributors. We're at about 40 right now. It's a stellar team. Everyone's pushing each other. We love you guys so much. What he just mentioned with partner podcasts, our contributors aren't only your writing and visual, they're now also your audio contributors as well, bringing you podcasts from Unwrapped that aren't necessarily the NBA, NFL, UFC, FFP,
team-specific podcasts now.
Not even just that either. They also have podcasts that are talking more general sports based, just like us, but it's just really good people that are all here for the same reason under our brand. Couldn't be happier to have them. Our team is fantastic. So keep an eye out.
Thank you guys, everyone who's partnered with us, everyone who's been supporting us by checking out our website. Please continue to do so. Hoping to continue to grow. So if you guys are interested in partnering up with us, if you have your own podcast or are thinking about starting your own podcast, I know we have some contributors who have been talking about starting a podcast, so we can link you guys up and hopefully we can continue to push out some really good content. So with that, let's get right into the purpose of this podcast, which is to talk about the NBA and the playoffs in particular. So
yeah,
first round is over. There's been some crazy, crazy finishes, mainly the Damian Lillard game winner, which we'll get to in a second. But what are your guys' just overall impressions with the first round? What maybe is one team that surprised you the most in the first round? What was the most disappointing team? Perry, I'll start with you.
I'm going to start with disappointing, and that's the Bucks. Or sorry, not that. That's the Pistons against the Bucks. Just to see them put up zero fight was really sad. Every game was really hard to watch. That was the one team that when I watched those games, I said, damn, they really have no spot in this playoff. There's no reason why that team should be here right now. I much rather would have given that to the Heat or another team that was fighting at the end there. Even the Magic put up a little bit of fight against the Raptors. Some of the games were close. They even stole the first one. So I would say that would be my most disappointing. I think the most surprising would be the Blazers. I didn't expect them to really beat up on the Thunder like that. I was one of the people that predicted the Thunder to win that. And I even thought they'd put up a really good fight in the second round too, especially if they were going to be facing who the Blazers are facing right now in the Denver Nuggets. I thought they matched up well. So OKC, they have a lot to think about, get back to the drawing board. I saw they aren't really thinking about firing their coach. I saw they plan on bringing him back. So you got to figure out some stuff to do to improve that roster, because the Blazers, who have made small improvements along the way, have finally figured out a way to take it to the next level after years of embarrassment in the playoffs. And that's all led by Damian Lillard now with what you said, Corbin, that shot that he made. We can just bring it up now. Insane shot. And we were discussing before this podcast, it's maybe more iconic, if not more prolific, if not more exciting, you can use whatever word you want, than that one shot that Michael Jordan is known for when he held that shot at the free throw line for the win.
Game winner in the 98 finals against the Jazz. I don't think that Lillard's shot will ever be more iconic than that, because that was in the finals to win the championship. This was to advance past the first round. But more incredible or more difficult shot, however you want to put it.
More impressive.
Absolutely. Damian Lillard, that was the most cold-hearted game-winning shot.
He's a cold maybe
in NBA history. Because you can think about, I'm sure there's been some half-court shots to win a game, but that's not one where... This one, Lillard had the opportunity to get closer to the basket, and he decided, you could see as soon as he got across half-court, he knew right then, I'm shooting it from here.
Oh, he could have went forward. He could have went forward. He had time to take at least a few steps forward, and he didn't. He even jumped back a little bit. He had no
desire to at all. Yeah,
that was his spot. He knew what spot he wanted to shoot it. And the thing was, Paul George, after the game, said that it was a bad shot. Like, you shouldn't take that shot. Like, that sounds
honestly,
like... Honestly, I get his comments.
It sounded, yeah.
It's not a practical shot. It's not a shot that you want to take your chances on, because clearly there are better shots to take. But to say that after getting that drained in your face, that's salt and vinegar on a different level. Are you serious right now?
It makes Paul George...
if it goes in.
Take your L, Paul George. Take your L. You took it on the court. Don't go and talk about it afterwards like that. Yeah, it was a bad shot in your face where he drained it. That's money.
It makes Paul George sound like he was salty, and I'm sure he was.
Sore loser.
But it was a bad shot. Max, you and I were talking about this before we started the podcast.
But why do you say that after the game?
Like, no, I know that's not the place to say it, and allow everyone else to watch. Everyone can make their own opinion.
Yeah, it's not a high percentage shot. But to Damian Lillard, that's a shot that he clearly felt confident in. That he's done before. That's not the first time he's made a shot from that length.
I saw a stat that Damian Lillard this year, I believe, from I think it was 26 to 39 feet, shot 39% this year. The rest of the league shot 26%.
That's crazy. So he's got range. I mean, the only other person I could think of that can make it as consistent, like you just said, Steph Curry. Those are the only two people in the league that I could say right now, give him a ball 38 feet away, no pressure, just put it up like it's nothing. LeBron, I could say, is a guy that is known for his long court shots, mainly before the game, but I wouldn't bank on him doing it a high percentage like the two of them.
He had a few at the beginning of this year before he went down with the injury where he was hitting some really deep shots, but no, consistently, obviously you're taking Steph, but Lillard's right up there too, and Max, will get to your opinion before I talk any more about it, but go ahead.
Oh, wait, what was the... most disappointing by far is still Oklahoma City. I mean, this is their since losing Durant in the 3-1, I guess, collapse in 2016.
Yeah, 3-1 against the Warriors.
They've lost a first round 3 years in a row, twice with Paul George.
Yep.
And you really got to wonder, what are you going to do? Last year, it was Paul George, Carmelo Anthony, and Russell Westbrook. Yeah, you didn't have, they didn't really have the right chemistry. You go out. You trade Carmelo Anthony, bring in
Dennis Schroeder
in as a smart sixth man. Hey, you still get knocked out by a team not only that has one, I guess, real superstar on their team, but a very balanced team. As I remember back in 2016, when everybody got the cap space, like, what was it, $16.2 million that everybody got?
I think it might have been even a little bit more than that.
Yeah, a little bit more than that. But everybody, like, they all went after superstars, like, bad contract stuff like that. I know the Lakers got Luol Deng and Timothy Mozgov. But everybody, surprisingly, everybody was making fun of the Trailblazers because they overpaid for, like, guys like Evan Turner.
And Alan Crabb.
Who else?
I think those were the
Mo two. Harkless and
A little bit.
There was another Al Farouk Aminu. Those four guys, and like right now, those four guys are part of that core Trailblazers team.
Alan Crabb's on the Nets.
Well, aside from Alan Crabb, but all of them are like part of that core really killing it in the playoffs, and that's goes along with their depth at the center position with Nurkic, Enes Kanter, Collins, and Meyers Leonard. It's really impressive.
Yeah, it is. I agree with Perry. You had said the Thunder were the most disappointing, too. So I agree with both of you. Thunder, clearly the most disappointing.
I actually said it was the Pistons. The Thunder would obviously be my second choice after I was talking about them, since I was talking about Damian Lillard and the Blazers. But I was talking about a team that disappointed, where they came out and didn't even show up at all. The Thunder at least put up some games where they were competitive. Regardless of seeding, it doesn't matter, because you're in this playoffs. Everything is behind you now. It's a fresh slate. The playoffs are, like Kyrie Irving said right now, it doesn't matter how many wins you stockpile. When it's playoffs, it's can you beat us in a 7-game series? Yep. And you see what they're doing right now. The Celtics are playing really well. They're playing a lot better than everyone expected. So it's exactly what he's saying. I think the Bucks really, really embarrassed the Pistons. And regardless of Blake Griffin being there for half the series or not, it was one of the most embarrassing performances I've seen of a team put up in a while.
Yeah, you could make an argument. The Pacers, I wouldn't say were the most disappointing, but I think that was the most gut-wrenching loss of
you knew any it was coming.
Yes, but I thought that the Celtics were going to sweep the Pacers.
Oh yeah, you knew that.
No
was
one
coming.
Thought that the Pacers were going
to
win the series, but
they limped
the Pacers.
Line,
but the Pacers, every single one of the four games, they were in it until the end.
Yeah, right?
And they competed really well.
If you're bringing your A game, you can tell. And I think the Pistons just felt really demoralized, especially starting the series without their star, Blake Griffin. And I think they really got outworked. And from the beginning, you could tell they weren't really fully
that
there.
That surprised me. I mean, biggest surprise still, I mean, out of everybody, has to be the Clippers. I mean,
yeah,
the fact
you
that,
can
yeah,
make an argument for that, too.
Argument,
they
yeah.
had the biggest comeback in NBA history at 31 points.
33.
I think it was 31. It was crazy. And I really give a lot of credit to Pat Beverly and this team, Lou Williams, Montrezl Harrell. Like, these are guys that really showed up this year, made a name for themselves. And I think if you're a big-name free agent, you need to be looking at the Clippers.
Exactly.
They got a lot of money. They got a owner that's willing to do whatever it takes. And you have a strong, strong young core of guys that aren't even fully developed yet. So I really think if you are a guy looking to play in a fresh spot, you get that LA atmosphere, even if it's not the Laker life and you don't get the big lights. Because if you are the right guy for LeBron, you're going to come play for LeBron. But we're not here going and auctioning to every single free agent. This is LeBron's plan. Whoever is going to be coming in and running the team, they need to follow what needs to happen to keep LeBron there and make this work. But on the other end of the spectrum, you need to be looking at the Clippers if you're just looking to make your money and find a team that is a serious wild card, because that's a spot.
Kawhi Leonard and Kevin Durant, please.
You know what's
going to
happen.
To this.
All right, Kawhi Leonard and Jimmy Butler.
I think if Philly lets Jimmy Butler go, I can really see Butler possibly.
I don't think they'll let him.
They're not going to let him go, but if he just decides.
If he decides, that would be so crazy.
They have, there's some stuff brewing with the Sixers. They just came, or they won game two against the Raptors. But
they're going
to
be fine. It's going seven, I know that.
We're going to get into predictions in a second, but yeah, if Jimmy Butler just decides he doesn't want to stay in Philadelphia, I could definitely see him
just
going
like
to the Clippers.
There.
Me too. It's a good fit. I think so.
Yeah,
and I think Kyrie Irving is another name that I wouldn't be surprised to see him go.
I think if he goes to LA, it would be the Lakers. Kawhi Leonard's the one that...
Yeah,
you hear conflicting reports. I've heard some stuff lately that he'd be interested in playing for the Lakers after for a while.
I think it's Toronto. I still think he stays, especially with how they play.
Yeah, same with Toronto.
Even if they get bounced from the 76ers right now, I think that's a team that
it's
you're not going to get a much better situation.
I've been hearing he likes the team dynamic in Toronto. It's just he's not too happy with actually being in the city of Toronto.
Toronto's a dope city. Let me tell you that.
The weather
sucks.
The weather sucks,
but right now he's going into summer. So I'm telling you, his mind may be a little bit different when he's not wearing 7 sweaters.
Yeah.
You know, it's going to be a little nicer, and he just came off the season. He's going to finally start an off-season program, probably back in San Diego where he lives, and he's going to realize it's not as cold in Canada for the entire year, and Toronto's a cool city. I really think he's going to stay because you're not going to get a better situation than the one that you're currently in right now.
Yeah, unless he can actually figure out a way for him and Jimmy Butler to play together. In
well,
LA. That's
they
it.
Could.
They could.
They go to the Clippers. Again, Kawhi, don't listen to me. But the interesting thing, though, was that Chris Carter, who is on First Things First on Fox Sports West.
Don't even start.
What?
I'm not a fan of his co-host.
Okay. Well, Chris Carter, though, is supposedly pretty close with Kawhi Leonard, and he had said on First Things First last week that if the Lakers were able to hire Masai Ujiri as the president, Kawhi Leonard would come to the Lakers because he's such a fan of what Masai Ujiri did with the Raptors. I don't know if I completely believe that, but it's interesting to hear that. And it's more interesting that the Lakers still haven't gone after, or at least reportedly haven't gone after, any big-name executives. I don't want to get too much into that just because we've spent a lot of time over the last few podcasts on that.
Okay.
But that's something we'll eventually revisit. We'll see how it turns out. But let's focus on the playoffs right now. Yeah, the Damian Lillard shot, just to get back to that really quickly. I rewatched that I don't know how many times, and I was just looking at everyone's reactions from Damian Lillard. As soon as he crosses half court, you see his eyes go up, and he knows this is where I'm shooting from, to Paul George. Paul George was probably my favorite reaction because he spurned the Lakers. I do not like Paul George, but you see, defensively, there are people that are saying, well, Paul George should have been up on him more. No, he shouldn't have. Damian Lillard's dribbling 35, 40 feet from the basket with 8 seconds left on the clock. Paul George is an elite defender, one of the best perimeter defenders in the NBA. But if he gets up on Damian Lillard, Lillard's a 6'3" point guard that's much quicker than Paul George.
He's not 6'3".
How tall is he? He's listed at 6'3". Who? Damian Lillard.
Lillard is 6'3". I just had this debate. Like, I just had this debate with Max the other day, which is even more frustrating considering I put up the poll asking you guys who would win in a fight between Damian Lillard and Russell Westbrook, and it was Damian Lillard by 2%. It was 52-48. So we decided that if there was a fight, he would win. And Max came to me with that same ignorant comment saying, "Oh, he's like 6". I stood next to him. He's super short. As I'm looking up their height and weight, and they're exactly the same at 6'3", about 200 pounds. So yes, unless they're completely lying, he's 6'3".
Well, most players do give themselves an extra inch or two. Thaddeus Young, I remember when he came into the NBA at the scouting combine, he was listed at...
What's Dwayne Wade listed at?
He's listed at 6'4".
He's a lot taller than 6'4". He's usually 6'5".
Usually they lie the other way. I don't know why
He's tall. He's tall.
Why would he lie the other way,
though? I don't know. Maybe he was wearing lifts or something. But he was tall.
Thaddeus Young, when he came in through the scouting combine, he was measured at 6'5¾", I believe, and he's listed at 6'9" in the NBA. Yeah. So a lot of players lie about that. But anyways, regardless of how tall Damian Lillard may be, he's quicker than Paul George. Yeah. If Paul George gets up on him and plays really close defense with 35-40 feet out with 7-8 seconds left, I don't remember if the Blazers were in the bonus where they would have shot free throws if he got fouled, but there's a chance you foul him. Also, if Paul George gets up on him, if he doesn't foul him, Lillard's getting by him. And for that reason, Paul George needed to be a little bit further back, because you have to think he's dribbling 35 feet out. Even if he wants to shoot a three, he's going to get 10 feet closer to the basket. He just never did. And you see Paul George is defending Damian Lillard. He keeps looking up the clock. His head, you see it turn towards the opposing sideline or opposing baseline's clock. And he sees 6 seconds. Then 5 seconds, he gets up a little closer. 4. And then when he looks, I think at like 3 seconds, that's when, as soon as his head turns to look at the clock, you see Lillard is waiting for his head to turn. And as soon as it does, Lillard starts his step back. Paul George, you see his reaction when he comes back from looking at the clock to looking at Lillard. He's not in a position to jump and contest the shot, so he just lunges out and doesn't get off the ground nearly as highly as he could have. And the rest was history. And Perry, you brought up that image of Damian Lillard just staring right in the camera.
The most badass picture I've ever seen in my life. So calm and collect. That is so cold. I cannot believe that. You need to throw a parental advisory stamp on top of that and make a mixtape right now. Considering it's Dame Lillard, who is a rapper.
Dame Dalla.
That better be there.
That should be the cover of his next album.
Cover of his next album.
It better be. Yeah. All right. Well, let's move on to just playoff predictions for the rest of these playoffs. So let's start in the Western Conference. We have the Warriors playing the Rockets. Right now, the Warriors are up 1-0. Max, what's your prediction for the rest of that series?
Honestly, I have no idea. I'm just going, I want 7 games because I want to enjoy every second of it.
I would have thought you'd definitely
choose love the Warriors to win, but it's just, I want to enjoy it because the playoffs have been fun.
Well, I care about sports and making predictions on this podcast, so I'm going Warriors in 6.
Yeah, I'm going to say Warriors in 6. I'm debating between 5 and 6, but I'm going to go 6. But yeah, the Rockets, look, they played really well in game one. There were some questionable calls and questionable no calls, but that's just part of the game. There was a report that Bleacher Report sent out today about how the Rockets had audited game seven of the Western Conference Finals last year, and that they found, I think, was it 81 missed calls? I don't know how you decide what, because so much is subjective.
Yeah.
That to say there are 81 missed calls and how that made a huge impact on, I guess part of the report said that the Rockets claimed that if those calls were made, they would have won the championship. You know what? If the Rockets hadn't missed 27 threes in a row, that probably would have helped them win that game too. So you can't blame the officiating for everything. You were the only team in NBA history that shot more threes than twos in the regular season, and it came back and bit you in the butt. You missed 27 threes in a row. That's what's going to happen. You're not going to win a game, especially not against a team as loaded as the Golden State Warriors.
Totally.
I'm choosing the Warriors in six. And too bad, Rockets. I'm sure they'll complain some more.
Yeah.
Let's move on to the other Western Conference game, which is actually going on as we're talking about this. The Denver Nuggets and the Portland Trail Blazers. Right now, Nuggets are up 113-104 in game one. Perry, what's your prediction for this series?
I'm going Blazers in six. And the Nuggets, they're a good team, don't get me wrong. But I really don't believe in that team long term. I think they're a little too young. I think they were almost here last year. They lost that winner-go-home game against the Timberwolves. And then, of course, everything imploded for them the next year. So I'm glad the Timberwolves got that last year. But the Nuggets this year came back, made improvements. Now they've improved on last year. They have went past the first round. They won a series against the Spurs, a Popovich-led Spurs. They have a lot to write home about. This is a great Denver Nuggets run, and they're going to have a lot to build forward. But I think this is the Blazers' year, not to win it all, but it's their year to make a run, I think, with how Lillard's playing right now. And they have to move on to that next round and play the Warriors. That's where their season's going to end. But I think they deserve to be there with how they're playing as a team.
Yeah, I just have to go with Blazers in seven. I mean, Lillard's on a whole different level right now after what he did.
You think they're going to win in Denver in game seven?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Just because this is Damian Lillard we're talking about. This is what he does. He wins in the craziest fashions of all time, and he's just on a run right now. And I don't think Denver is really experienced enough overall as a team to make it to the conference finals and do any damage to a possible Golden State or, in the unlikely event, Rockets in the Western Conference Finals.
Yeah, that's my thinking too. It's not so much the inexperience that plays a small factor in it for me, but it's more just you look at the Denver Nuggets, and I've been adamant about this throughout the season, that the Nuggets are a great regular season team because they have so much depth. They're by far the deepest team in the NBA. But when it comes to the playoffs and you have to rely on your star players to get you to where you want to go, Nikola Jokic is a great, great NBA player. You could argue he's a top 10 player in the NBA. But even with him almost averaging a triple-double, he's not the type of player in the playoffs that is going to be able to guide you through the, especially the Western Conference. And outside of Nikola Jokic, Nuggets have a lot of above average to very good players, but they don't have anyone else that they can lean on.
Get you 50.
Yeah, Jamal Murray is the only perimeter player they have that can really.
Murray did lock that game in for them last round. He has shown moments, and I think he would be that next guy. And I know you have a certain bias.
Yeah, are you confident in Jamal Murray being able to carry your team?
No. I don't think he's at that level, but I think he is their second guy, and he's shown flashes that he could be that guy as he drains a three in front of us. Yeah. We're watching the game. But Murray is that mindset is there. I think Murray is going to have a fantastic future, and I think he's going to be one of the faces in Denver for a long time, but he's not going to do it this year.
Yeah, I'm not too high on Jamal Murray as a basketball player moving forward in terms of what his ceiling can be. I don't think that the Nuggets would be serious championship contenders ever with Jokic and Jamal Murray as their top two players. But they'll be a good team, and again, very good regular season team, but because they don't have the stars, they're not going to do a whole lot in the playoffs. I thought the Spurs were going to beat them. I was surprised that the Nuggets won that series.
That's another one that I predicted.
But I'm going with the Blazers in six as well. I don't think that the Nuggets. I'd be surprised if they win the series.
Right.
Let's move on to the Eastern Conference. So we have game that just happened earlier today, the Raptors and the 76ers. Now they're tied at one game apiece, headed back to Philadelphia. Perry, what do you think?
I think this series is going to go seven. I thought it was going to go six, and I really saw how the 76ers played today. They got a lot of fight in them, and I like that team, but I think it's going to be the Raptors in seven. They're going to win that. Kawhi Leonard's playing out of his mind right now. They're well coached. We give a lot of hate to Nick Nurse before the season, me and Christian, but mainly just making jokes. But well,
they should have hired a doctor instead of a nurse.
Yeah, it should have been Nick Doctor. But yeah, with Nick Nurse, it's a great season for him. You got to give it to him and that team because they're really outperforming everyone. And I think right now in the East, there's not a team that can touch them if the Bucks are playing the way that they're playing right now against the Celtics.
So you had the Sixers winning in seven?
The Raptors.
I got the Sixers in seven. Okay. I mean, mostly this is just because I'm an Embiid fan, but it's just something about Jimmy Butler. They're such a great matchup for each other, and they can go punch for punch with each other.
They
could also punch each other,
though. Exactly. But it's all going to come down to just like one moment. And I get the feeling that the Sixers are going to come out on top in that moment.
I agree with you that it's going to come down to one moment. I think it's going to go seven, but I have more confidence in Kawhi Leonard and I guess Marc Gasol. I certainly do not have much confidence in Kyle Lowry because when the playoffs show up, he does not show up.
That's one of the reasons you can't have confidence in Toronto but overall.
In spite of Kyle Lowry's shortcomings in the playoffs, Kawhi Leonard just makes such a huge difference for the Raptors.
Oh, yeah, and of course.
He is, even tonight, he had, I think, was it 30 or 35 points with 6 rebounds, 7 assists. He's a problem for the Sixers because Jimmy Butler, as good of a defender as he is, he's not big enough to guard Kawhi Leonard. Tobias Harris isn't fast enough.
Yeah.
He's the biggest matchup problem I think, of any team.
Yeah, in the NBA. Absolutely. Kawhi Leonard is...
Ben Simmons.
No. You saw how he played against him in game one. Kawhi put up a postseason career high. So, no, Ben Simmons even made a comment after the game. He thought he did a pretty good job on him. If that's a pretty good job, then I'm doing a pretty good job at a lot of things right now, and I need no improvement. So, seriously, Ben Simmons, get your head out of your ass. Get some defense. Get in a stance, because Kawhi's the hardest matchup you're going to have all year.
Yeah. Well, it's the last matchup he's going to have, too, this year.
If you're going with my prediction.
Yeah. So let's move on to the other Eastern Conference matchup. That's the Bucks and the Celtics. Celtics very surprisingly handled the Bucks in game one.
Really fucked them up. Yeah.
They're up 1-0. Max, what do you think going forward?
I got to just. This is going to be a real test for Giannis because he wants to make that jump into superstardom, and he's already down a lot with a big surprise. He lost home court advantage to the Celtics, and he's going up against a very stacked team. And he has a team that's dealing with a lot of injuries. How is he going to make or lift up his players around him to beat the Celtics? So I'm just going to go with, I think he'll find a way. I don't know how he'll find a way, but he'll find it. And I'm going to just go with Milwaukee in seven because I just have that feeling.
Yeah, you say he's entering stardom or career, whatever you said.
Like going from stardom to superstar.
He's in superstardom. He's a superstar.
He's going to be the league.
Put it this way. They can get swept, and he could put up 0 points for the rest of the entire series, and he's still an absolute superstar and a top three player.
I get what Max is trying to say.
I'm talking about.
Just in terms of there's as good as you can possibly be in the regular season.
I think the best
doing it in the playoffs is where you
I think he's trying to become a pillar in this league. You know, and I think right now this is his moment, like you said, Max. And I agree with you, he's gonna find a way. I think it's gonna go to seven, like you said. I think it's gonna go Bucks. And I think Brad Stevens is gonna be an issue for this Bucks team because Brad Stevens is a very smart coach. The team kind of got hot at a good time. Kyrie Irving is playing well, so it's one of those situations where, you know, the spark is going to happen. I just don't think it's going to continue enough to beat a much longer Bucks team, a much more deep Bucks team. I think In my opinion, I think
Celtics are deeper than the
Bucks. Not in my opinion. I think the Bucks are such a deep team. I think the Celtics have a lot of holes.
So you have the Bucks winning in seven?
I have the Bucks winning in seven. I think the Celtics are only winning right now because they're momentum, but I wouldn't call them a deep team.
I'd say Celtics from top to bottom are a more talented team than the Bucks. Giannis is clearly the best player.
No, I disagree completely. I think that roster top to bottom, it's 100% Bucks in my opinion. With the acquisitions that they made throughout this year, okay, this team is well built.
Well, we can disagree on that then, because my focus of this was that the Bucks. I think the Bucks. I'm debating between either Bucks winning in six or winning in five. I don't think seven. Bucks are going to win this series. The biggest issue for the Bucks is obviously they're going to need to adjust. Kyrie Irving and Al Horford just destroyed them on the pick and pop last game. And when the Celtics go small to start the game with Marcus Morris at the four instead of Daniel Theis, that creates issues for the Bucks because Brooke Lopez has to guard Al Horford. And on that pick and pop, Lopez, as great of an interior defender as he's a very slow player. And he can't get out to guard Al Horford outside and then be able to stay with him if Al Horford tries to drive after a pump fake, especially if Lopez bites on the pump fake. So they've got to just readjust their coaching staff needs to readjust a little bit. And
I think Giannis needs to get his swagger back, because I saw an interview after game one where they asked how they were feeling going into game two. And he's like, I can't promise a win, but I can promise you that we're going to try hard. Along those lines. And it was one of those, Giannis throughout this whole year, just like Embiid, is a very cocky foreigner, just like Ennis, Cantor, and just like the rest of them. They're very vocal. Porzingis is liking everyone's photos on Instagram. Like, they like to be funny and loud in America. And I love that. I know you guys love it. It's fun.
Yeah, and the other thing with the Bucks, though, is just offensively for them, if the Celtics are going small and putting Al Horford on Giannis, one thing, Giannis hit three threes last game, which if I told you Giannis hit three threes and still had a bad game, that's pretty incredible in and of itself. Yeah. But Brooke Lopez, I know he shot a lot of threes this year and he shot them pretty well. But if the Celtics are putting Marcus Morris on him, he has to get down to the post. 100%. He's 7 feet, one of the more physical players in the NBA. He needs to take advantage of that, and that's what the Bucks need to focus on moving forward. They're also going to get a bump. It looks like Malcolm Brogdon might be ready for game three.
That would be big.
Their starting shooting guard, whereas the Celtics starting shooting guard, Marcus Smart, is most likely out for this entire series, regardless of how long it takes. So that's the biggest bump for the Bucks, and yeah, I don't see it going more than six.
Yeah, I mean, I like your thought process on there. I think it's the Bucks, no doubt, though. I really like that team from top to bottom.
Yeah. Let's move on to a Lakers former coach, now being hired by the Kings, Luke Walton, hired as the Sacramento Kings coach, and also former Sportsnet LA host Kelly Tennant filing a lawsuit where she claimed that Luke Walton sexually assaulted her in May of 2017. So let's talk about the lawsuit just briefly. I don't want to get too much into it. We don't have a lot of the facts, and obviously we're not a judge or a jury, so we'll let the courts take care of that, but it's pretty alarming what this could mean if this ends up being true. Again, don't want to say if it is true or is not true. We'll see what the facts present, but this is definitely alarming nonetheless. This happened when Luke Walton was still a member of... Well, there was a report that said when he was still a member of the Warriors, but
That was the year before.
So then it would be May of 2016, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah, 2016.
Yeah, so... Look, I mean, we'll see what happens. It's alarming.
Yeah, I think I want to just make a comment on him being hired from the Kings. I'm just happy to see him not in LA anymore. I didn't like his coaching style at all. I really thought he was really inconsistent with a lot of his rotations. Yep. I think his decision-making was off, and he was very timid. And I'd really like to see a coach that can take the game by the horns and really try and run that shit and go out there, and you can tell that he's a major force on the court, but I really don't see that in Luke Walton. So I think him going to the Kings, you know, good for him getting another job. I thought his next job would be rather an assistant coaching job or a head coach in college. I didn't think he'd get another NBA head coaching gig. I'm not saying he was the worst coach with the Lakers, but I really didn't see this coming. I really thought he would have at least had a year off before getting any kind of offers. But, you know, good for him. If this is true, you know, you're a piece of shit just like everyone else that has anything to do with sexual assault. But like, you know, Corbin said, it could be a false accusation. It could be true. We don't have the facts here. I just think it's sad that we even have to, you know, report these things, considering I just talked about the Tyreek Hill situation on the fantasy pod this morning. So many shitty things that happen to some of these major athletes, regardless if they're true or not. And yes, Luke Walton's a coach, but he was an athlete. He's still a dude that's in sports. So just having your name floated around in these accusations, I guess it comes with the territory sometimes with you being famous and people taking shots. But at the same time, like, your name, you know, I don't really think it'd be really tossed around too much if you weren't in certain situations or involved with certain people. I think, you know, people all around sports just need to be smarter.
Yeah. Focusing strictly on the actual coaching fit with Luke Walton and the Kings, I'm not surprised that Luke Walton has another coaching gig. He didn't do a great job with the Lakers, but when the Lakers hired him 3 years ago, he was inarguably the hottest assistant coach. Wanted a lot of teams wanted him as their head coach. At the time, it looked like the Lakers got an absolute steal. Right. And Luke Walton even had said the Lakers were the only team that he would have given up his situation in Golden State to come coach. Yes, Luke Walton didn't do a great job, but it's not entirely on him. He wasn't given the greatest set of circumstances either, with the way the front office didn't do him any favors at all. Mm-hmm. Him moving on to the Kings,
I mean, they did by not firing him mid-year.
Well,
I think he still
but got the to... Wrong,
he was hired by Jim Buss, too.
Yeah, he was hired by a different front office, too. Yeah. Yep.
And when he came in, like you said, they had a different game plan. They had a lot of different players on their roster. They had a different core they were messing with, and then that kind of scrapped that, and they were going for LeBron, and then it was Anthony Davis and a lot of chemistry issues. So there's a lot of things.
Well, like even you just said, the front office.
Like you said,
the front office construction this offseason. LeBron said it best when he just made a raspberry noise when he was asked what he thought about their roster this year and the way they constructed it. But Luke Walton going to the Kings, I would argue that Dave Yeager, who was the coach that was fired by the Kings, is actually a better head coach than Luke Walton.
Totally.
It's just that Dave Yeager reportedly is an absolute nightmare to deal with, and the front office and the ownership group was having difficulty with getting through to Dave Yeager, getting him to change his philosophy on some stuff to what they wanted. So they decided he's not worth it. Let's bring in Luke Walton. Judging off of the initial press conference that Luke Walton had with Vlade Divac, who's the Kings'
general manager. Yeah, they look like fucking best buds.
They did look like they have a pretty good connection. So there's definitely some worth to that. You would rather work with someone who you get along with than someone who is a headache. But Dave Yeager, he did a great job with the Kings last year. And it's weird to say that a coaching position with the Kings comes with some pressure. But for the first time in a while, it does. The Kings, they faded towards the end of last year, but they were in the playoff mix for about three quarters of the year.
They were.
And they're going to be looking to build off of that. They have a very nice nucleus in De'Aaron Fox, Marvin Bagley, and I said nucleus instead of young nucleus, and because
Buddy Hield,
who is only going into his 25? Fourth year, but he's 26 years old 26. Already. So that's why I don't think Buddy Hield has much more room to grow, but their nucleus as a whole.
If he plays like he played last year for the rest of his career, sign me up. That's fine.
Oh, yeah, I'd take him for sure.
Sign me up. That's a starting two right there for me. Not the star of your team, but, you know, keep him there. If not, towards the end of your career.
Very solid starter.
Solid sixth man. If you want to bring him off the bench instead, like, that's a guy that can get hot at any moment. So, but De'Aaron Fox is a guy that showed that he's the real deal.
To piggyback off of what you said, I want to quote Popovich real quick. A synergy has to form between the owner, whoever the president is, whoever the GM is, and whoever the coach is. As you said, Dave Yeager is not the easiest person to deal with. We always think about how bad Luke Walton was with the Lakers and how he's got a young, great team coming in. And Vlade is the president and GM of the Kings, along with, what's his last name, Randev, who's the owner?
Oh, and they're Vivek Ranadive.
Yeah, and they're on the same page when it comes with that. They've always had problems with the coaches not being on the same page, from Mike Malone to George Karl to Dave Yeager most recently. Now they got Luke Walton, a guy who Vlade played with in his final season in the NBA with the Lakers. So they have that kind of synergy going into the relationship. They've been at practices. They ran sprints together. They've done all that. Now they're finally going to have that synergy from top to bottom. I get the feeling this is going to be like a Luke Walton, Steve Kerr moment. Like Dave Yeager, like, brought him all this way.
Just a lot less successful.
Less successful. And then Luke Walton's going to come in because he just gets it. Boom, they're going to become an amazing team. Because who can't remember when the Warriors first became good in 14-15? Yeah. I still have a Slam magazine. They were like voted to go 7th in the preseason predictions, and they went 67-15.
Oh, you're talking about the first year with Steve Kerr. Yeah, I remember that. And yeah. Steve Kerr is a very good coach, but he's not the greatest X's and O's coach. What he is arguably the best in the NBA at is just building team chemistry, building the concept of no one person is bigger than the team and getting everyone to buy in.
Right.
That goes such a long way.
You can tell with even his post-game conferences, he's so fun. He's so, easygoing, and he's always joking. He just did the other day, I think it was yesterday, he started his post-game conference with an impression of Harden and how he flops, and he's just like flopping his body all the way around, and everyone's laughing, and he's kind of just giggling too. Like, he's not taking a shot. He's just kind of just stayed out. I'm sure he was talking about his players too. Like, everyone's just flinging around. Like, and you can tell that's a guy that, is constantly dropping dad jokes, has the best culture. You could tell, like you said, Corbin, he's telling his players that you need to be part of something that's bigger than yourself. You need to give for the better of the team. And I think that's why people want to play for him. That's why the Warriors are going to keep success, even if they don't keep winning a championship every single year. I think they're a team that's going to stay in that contention regardless how long this dynasty lasts. They're going to be in contention every year, because even if they lose players, they're going to get new ones, and they're going to keep filling it because Steve Kerr is providing that culture that people want to come to.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, he is a coach that people want to play
for. He's a culture coach.
Really quickly, I remembered I wanted to bring up the Rockets-Warriors series with James Harden flopping and all the fouls and stuff. Chris Paul got ejected with 4 seconds left in the game, and at the time it was still a 3-point game. I would have been more upset if I felt like the Rockets had a realistic chance of winning the game, but I do not think that unless a player does something absolutely egregious, like hits another player or does something terrible to a referee, yelling and cussing at a referee. Chris Paul got one technical. Go ahead and give him the technical.
He bumped the referee. That's why he got thrown out.
Okay, still just...
It's one of those arcane rules, but they keep it in there just because they keep it in there.
Okay, but do you think that...
I mean, no,
let's say it was just a tie game. If he got ejected with 4 seconds left, that would not
it's
going
to be one of those things.
Chris Paul needs to be careful too, though. We can't put all the onus on the refs, but...
Yeah. But this is Chris Paul who's been really walking that fine line all year. With the referees, he's been
mimicking.
Not even that. Steph Curry's in that exact same boat. Steph Curry's been an absolute Mick asshole to the referees too, pointing and laughing that one game, and they're running around like school kids. Like, for us watching on television, it's very entertaining. We love it. This is a business that we're tuning into, that we have a podcast around talking about it. Like, that's how much we love it. But for the game of basketball, like, that respect level's not there anymore. Like, the referees now, it's the official NBA ref Twitter account, and people are bitching at the Twitter account and adding them, and, they're talking back and defending themselves. Like, no, that's not it. It's so stupid how it is. Now you have to provide a player a landing spot. Now you got Harden jumping from 39 feet to 23 feet, somehow doing the long jump and, flying. I don't really know. I think at this point it looks like there is a disconnect between the referees, between the players. The respect level's not there. The rules aren't as defined as we'd hope. And there's a lot of questionable shit going on right now.
That's the thing with James Harden's step back, though, and why he gets so many calls. Because, look, as a defender, you have to allow the offensive player to land when he jumps up for a jump shot. And James Harden with the step back, he's dribbling at the defender, forcing him backwards. And when he starts his step back, Harden's moving back. The defender is moving towards James Harden to try to close the gap on the shot. But when James Harden shoots, he does jump forward quite a bit, and part of it's by design, but that's what he does on all of his jump shots.
Yeah, he's hopping all over the place.
Yeah, so it's tough to close out on a James Harden step back three after he's got you moving forward and then moving back without fouling
him. And speaking of that, Klay Thompson went at him. This was game one, and it was three different occasions where Harden went down hard on a three-point shot with a Klay Thompson closeout, and it looked extremely intentional. So we're going to keep note on that for the rest of the series, because it was very early in the series when this stuff started happening. So by game five or six, there's going to be some punches thrown. If you had Chris Paul fighting with Rondo in the regular season, this is playoffs. This is intensity. This is where things get even chippier.
You would hope the players aren't stupid enough.
You would hope Chris Paul wouldn't bump a ref and get ejected with 4 seconds left. You'd hope for a lot of things, but I think ego gets in the way a lot, and it's going to be a super chippy series. I'm excited to see how bad this gets.
Let's see. Let's move on to the New Orleans Pelicans. So they hired David Griffin as their new executive vice president of basketball operations. We mentioned when Dell Demps was fired as the GM for the Pelicans that they had two people that were the primary candidates for the job. It was David Griffin, and then I forgot the name, but
I think Danny Ferry was up for the job.
He was.
Yeah, he was. But at the time when Dell Demps was fired, it seemed to be Danny Ferry's going to take over for the rest of the season, but it was either David Griffin or the assistant GM for the Celtics. I'm blanking on his name right now.
Zarin, I think his name
is. Yeah, Mike Zarin, yep. But Danny Ferry did become a candidate for the job as well, but still, David Griffin, home run, absolute home run for the Pelicans.
It's the move of the
shocking year. Shocking to me that David Griffin committed to the Pelicans this early when the Lakers opening still, I guess, is technically available, although maybe David Griffin got some signs or something from someone letting him know either they're not going to hire someone from the outside, or if they are, they're not interested in David Griffin. You got to imagine there's going to be, I mean, the Wizards opening, I would think, is more desirable than the Pelicans. So for the Pelicans to get David Griffin, absolute win for them. David Griffin said that he's confident that they won't have to trade Anthony Davis, or he thinks there's at least a reasonable chance.
You don't have to.
Regardless, either way, whether they trade Anthony Davis or don't, David Griffin is one of the best people that you could have in this position to steer your franchise forward.
I completely agree. I think this ups the chance of Davis staying, of course, and if not, it 100% ups the chance that you're going to get a decent haul in return.
I still think he's gone. I think with everything that's happened, I just don't think you can.
Regardless, I'm confident that David Griffin's going to handle this correctly. With Dell Demps, we're all sitting there
like, what's going on?
Our heads are spinning because of how ridiculous this whole thing was. And if you're Anthony Davis, do you want to stay after that? No. But then they fire the people that did that. They bring in new people. It's like when you quit a job because you hated your manager, and then you look at it 2 years later and you run into your old buddy that worked with you and you're like, yo, we're still looking for another bartender. And you're like, oh, is that manager still there? And they're like, nope, he got fired. It sounds good. I'm coming back for the same exact job, because that was the reason why I left before. So I think that's how this is. And for David Griffin, I really think home run, like you said, for the Pelicans.
Oh, yeah.
Beautiful. And I really think that they're going to make some moves, regardless if Anthony Davis stays or not, to be in contention within the next 3 to 4 years. This isn't a team that's going to be screwed for the next 5 years with nothing to look forward to. I really think within the next 3 or 4 years, they're going to be back. You're going to be exciting with or without Anthony Davis, strictly because of this hire.
Yeah, David Griffin's going to right the ship for sure.
Yeah, and I was thinking about this the other day. Like, you think about the last 3 years. You remember the retirement tours that Kobe got.
Yeah.
And the retirement tour that D-Wade just ended. Like, how much love they got from their cities because they stayed true to their city. I mean, yeah, D-Wade had that little falling out for a year and a half where he spent time in Chicago and Cleveland.
It was quickly forgiven.
It was quickly forgiven, but the amount of love and remembrance that they got. And one thing that Anthony Davis always mentions above all is winning and legacy. And he's not going to have the same legacy if he just gets traded somewhere else as he would have if he stays with...
I'd rather win a championship elsewhere and have half the legacy than stay there for pride purposes and never win a championship in New Orleans.
You could even make the argument, though, that, look, Anthony Davis, I know he could get paid a little bit more staying with New Orleans than going somewhere else, but honestly, you could make an argument that even if you're winning championships, whether it be with the Pelicans or in a big market like L.A. or New York or somewhere even Boston, I'd rather want to take a little bit less money and win a championship there, not just because it's a more storied franchise, but because New Orleans is the smallest market in the NBA. And I'd much rather want to live in a city like New York or Los Angeles.
We don't have Christian on the podcast right now, but that's a man who lived in Louisiana. And I will speak for him right now, saying that Anthony Davis does not want to live there and will rather pick any other city. And that's loud and clear for all Louisiana fans. And I'm going to message that from Christian spoken by Perry.
Christian would paint a little bit more colorful of a picture. He'd have some pretty nice stories.
His would be much harsher than mine. I'm saying it lightly.
Perry's giving it to you lightly.
I'm saying it lightly. Yeah. There's no, he doesn't want to be there.
Sorry, New Orleans fans.
I mean, but you got to also look at it this way. Like, Anthony Davis is a bona fide top five player in the league.
Can we agree
on that?
I'd say arguably top five. I'd put him in my top five, but you could make a case
he's
that
one
he's
of
not.
Like those studs.
Yes,
And in return, you're getting basically what amounts to a bunch of Easter eggs with young guys and draft picks. Like, you don't know if they're going to they're looking good to start out, but then they just might, as soon as the rookie contracts, just go straight to the toilet.
Yeah, that's a weird
logic. That's always they're being overvalued.
Yeah, like, the thing that scares me with, especially, like, let's say they made a deal with the Lakers and Lakers gave up Ingram. Well, Ingram, I don't know how much trade value he has right now with the blood clotting, because that's very serious.
That's very serious.
Yeah, David Griffin had gone on record while he was still an analyst at NBA TV saying that he really liked Brandon Ingram. But again, the blood clotting. After this next year, he's going to be a free agent, restricted free agent, where he's probably, I would assume, going to get a max contract.
I don't think so.
I think the only reason why he wouldn't is because of the blood clotting thing. I think his play, while it hasn't been as good as some people thought it would be, he's played well enough to where he's earned a max contract. But that's someone who I'm not sure if he's worth a max contract. I would probably say yes, but more concerning would be Kyle Kuzma, who is, what, 23, 24 years old right now. He has two more years until you have to pay him. Kyle Kuzma is the type of player, I thought this, just one player that comes off the bat right away is Nicholas Batum when he was done with his rookie contract and he got either a max contract or close to it. I thought that's one of the players where, yes, the Blazers need to keep him, and in order to keep him, they're going to have to pay him a lot, but you don't really want to pay him that much. And Kuzma is the same type of player where he can be a really good scorer, but he isn't extremely efficient, and he doesn't really do much else besides score. But because the league puts a premium on players who can score the ball, he's going to get paid.
Right. No, I totally see where you're coming from. And I think for the Pelicans, you take the best package that's there, and I think you move on from Anthony Davis. I think the Lakers can offer you a great package. I think the Celtics can offer a great package. And I think there's other teams that we don't expect right now that are going to be able to put together a package that didn't really go for him that hard at that point in time, but now going into next offseason when things change, they know people are leaving, they have other promises from other people, that's where you're going to see a couple of their wild cards coming in here making a push. And I really think one of the suitors is going to definitely sweeten the prize enough for David Griffin to, you know, sit back and watch his new slate of players come in to make it his team, his project, completely restart. And we were even talking about before the podcast with Drew Holiday, who's got a heavy contract. They can add him in a trade. I'd love to see him stick around in New Orleans, but who knows if he even wants to stay there with how this is going. He may want to win now since he's at that point of his career. I think it makes sense. If you want to blow it all up, you take the best package possible. You try to kill it in the draft. You suck for a few years, but with David Griffin, I think there's a three-year cap to where after that three-year mark, by that fourth year, you're winning. Not the championship, but you're at least above 500. Yeah, you are a playoff contender by year four. You have a team that you're happy about. You have jerseys being worn around the stadium. But I think at first it's going to be tough. And if you keep Anthony Davis, you're just prolonging this. Because he's going to leave at some point.
We got to remember that David Griffin really hasn't built anything. Like, just
except a championship.
No, I know. I get the championship. But you got to remember, he fell into LeBron when he first became...
Yeah, but he's still... added the pieces around him to...
No, but all those draft picks were already there, is what I'm saying. Like, all he had to do was trade Andrew Wiggins basically for Kevin Love and everything.
Yeah,
else
they made some together. Other deals.
There were some. So, I'm not saying there weren't some smart deals to get like Iman Shumpert and like all that. Like
J.R. Smith, even though he did screw them last year, but he did contribute to their championship team.
Yeah, but point being, it's just like he built like after LeBron got there. I'm talking about the initial stages, like the sucking part. Like as soon as he got there, boom! Like LeBron's there. get me Kevin Love, and just find me some more pieces. That's all you had to do was find some more pieces.
In David Griffin's defense, though, as much as you can say, oh, well, he didn't have to do too much, you have to somewhat swallow your pride and swallow your ego to not overthink things. And it's not just, oh, well, you have LeBron, so you're going to be a contender. Case in point, look at Rob Pelinka and Magic Johnson.
Oh, of course.
They thought that they were smarter than the rest of the NBA, and instead of going with conventional wisdom of, oh, you have LeBron James, well, surround him with shooters, it was, no, you know what, we're going to have other playmakers around him because we're not going to out Golden State, Golden State. Well, you know what? They should have just been concerned about making the playoffs, first of all, because clearly they couldn't even do that. Exactly. So David Griffin, you know what? Yeah, he didn't guide the Cavaliers from terrible to great on his own. He got some help. But any general manager who assembles a good team, they get help along the way.
Yeah, they're not playing NBA. They're not playing NBA 2K. Playing 2K. Like, this isn't Dynasty mode. Like, you have other people that are at that NBA level, that pedigree, that are there by your side. Like, it's not like, here, Mr. Griffin, here's your team.
You need stuff to... You need stuff to bend in your favor.
Yeah, that's right. True. But didn't you love the whole... Since Anthony Davis went down, you love the whole Julius Randle, Jahlil Okafor resurgence a little bit?
Julius Randle is one of my favorite players.
There's no resurgence. Julius Randle
is... The real coming out party.
Randle's been a straight
But
baller.
Julius Randle, I will never get over the Lakers just letting him walk so we could sign Rajon Rondo.
I love Rondo, but
I do not love Rondo.
He just happened to be that player that took that slot.
I do not like Rondo at all.
Oh, I love Rondo. That's that grit.
But still, you would much rather want Randle than Rondo.
Right? Oh, if it's that roster spot, it's 12 out of 10 times.
Yeah.
Like, if you're the Pelicans and you're David Griffin, what do you ask for from the Celtics? I mean, we know what you're
going to
get.
You're going to start out asking for a massive everything.
Like,
but I don't know. We can get into this probably more in the offseason.
You're probably
Jason Tatum.
That's the centerpiece.
I'm not as high on him as I think some people in the NBA are. I think he had a really good playoff run last year, but you look at what he's done these past 2 years. Yeah, he's been a good player, but he isn't, oh my God, that's going to be one of the best players
in
the league.
Then why are you trading Anthony Davis for him?
Well, because you have to get something for him, and we'll see. But we'll get into this more on another podcast. Move on to the Phoenix Suns firing head coach Igor Kokoschkov. So they reportedly fired Kokoschkov when they did so that they could get in on the Monty Williams sweepstakes. Monty Williams has already interviewed twice with the Los Angeles Lakers. He's rumored to be a candidate to be the 76ers head coach if the Sixers decide to fire Brett Brown.
I don't see that happening.
Yeah, I don't see that happening either. They just signed him to
I think they probably don't, but there's some stuff that's just been happening in the locker room where it wouldn't shock me if he gets fired, especially if they don't make it out of the semifinals right here. Oh, yeah. I think then it could be realistic. If they get to the conference finals and lose, then I think Brett Brown's probably safe, though. But anyways, the Suns firing Igor Kokoschkov. Perry, what are your thoughts on it?
I think he kind of is just a casualty of war. I think he's a good coach, and they actually were starting to play a lot better towards the end of the season. But just a guy that got dealt a bad hand, really just an awful team besides Booker, who's putting up 70 points a game half the time. Booker is an incredible scorer, but there's not a lot of pieces to win on that team. You know, there's a lot of young players. They made a really good move to bring in Kelly Oubre for Ariza, who was just on a one-year contract.
Yeah, they were going
to lose him anyways, and they got back an amazing piece to that young core. I mean, I really like their draft with what they did. I just think it's a little too early in their rebuild process. So he, like I said, was just a casualty of war. So the next coach is going to reap the benefits of the last year or two of growth for this team. And I think after another big name player comes in through the draft, and hopefully they can land someone in free agency, they can finally put together a team that can make a push towards that 8 seed. Hopefully, like the Kings did this last year, the Mavericks even played really well. And that's going to team that's going to play even better with Kristaps coming in next year, even with Dirk leaving. It's just a new, younger version of Dirk coming in pretty much. So I really am excited to see how that kind of all plays out.
I mean, they got to hire a coach who knows how to win. I mean, This team has been losing for a long time. These guys don't know how to win.
At least a guy they could bring in and set a culture.
Yeah, change the culture, because this is such a losing. Like, they say the biggest problem with the whole process in Philadelphia was changing the idea of constantly losing to becoming a very winning team. You know how they did it a little while? They in 16-17, they won, like, I think it was like 30-something games, and then won, like, almost, I think it was at least 50 games last year and then 50 games this year. But it's changing that culture that really takes time, whereas Boston did a rebuild in a single year and kept winning. They need a coach who can, who's been there, done it before, can get them there, and then at least bring in some veterans to get them to the playoffs at the very least. A seed is what they should be aiming for.
Yeah, and I'm a Phoenix Suns fan with Devin Booker there. I really do like some of the pieces. It's just there's one or two things missing, two major things that are missing. And you talk about a contender and adding little pieces. They're a few steps behind that. They have to add still a few more pieces to even put them in a position to add a add someone else to make them a contender. So the Suns in a bit of purgatory right now while still having a pretty decent rebuild. I think getting the right coach in there, setting the right culture is going to be interesting. I do like their GM. I think he's active and at least he's trying. So I think the Suns within the next 2 years are going to be at least exciting.
Yeah, Max, you talk about changing the culture in Phoenix. It doesn't start with a head coach. That's obviously a big part of it, but it starts with front office and ownership.
Of course.
Robert Sarver has been a mess.
A terrible.
A mess of an owner for the Suns for I don't know how long now. And there was this one story that I heard, I don't know how far back, but it did happen when the Suns' former general manager, Ryan McDonough, was their general manager. Robert Sarver attended an event with, I think it was an event put on by Diana Taurasi at the Talking Stick Resort Arena, which is where the Suns play. Diana Taurasi, for anyone who doesn't know, one of the best WNBA players in the league. And he acquired goats at that event, put them into Ryan McDonough's office so that when McDonough came in, he would see all the goats. And it was supposed to be a prank and an inspirational message letting the GM know, we need to find a goat of our own, kind of like Diana Taurasi is for the Phoenix Mercury.
Oh, didn't but the goats fuck
what
up the
ended
office?
Up, what ended up happening was all the goats pooped on McDonough's carpeting, and they had to have, it was a mess. They had to, like, kick everyone out of the office because it smelled so awful, and they had to clean up the whole office. Just that sort of thinking where it's like, what good do you think is going to come out of stuffing a ton of live goats into an office for hours?
Imagine if those goats were pissed too. Like you open that door and like they're the locked in there. Like they're probably trying to get out of that door. Like you may get trampled.
The first time hearing about this.
You may get trampled by this goat parade coming out of your office. That's such a weird tactic to try and hype up a coach.
Honestly, they're lucky that all they did was poop on the carpeting because they could have absolutely destroyed everything.
Could have went through a window.
Everything in that office. So yeah, that's just where you talk about needing to change the culture. Yeah, look it up. I got an article I can send you right here.
I didn't even know that. Damn.
Yeah. So you talk about changing the culture. Yes, the coach needs to bring forth a good culture, but if you still have an owner doing something like that and the GM who, I mean, it depends what the GM, I think James Jones is the GM.
Yeah, it's James Jones, but they need to get somebody who just knows what they're doing.
Someone who won't put live goats in an office, but that's the owner again. So let's move on to our final topic. So Dwayne Wade, who again just retired recently within the past few weeks, he has been courted by ESPN and TNT. They're reportedly both offering jobs for Dwayne Wade as a studio analyst. Do you guys have a preference on TNT versus ESPN? Which one?
Get him on ESPN just so he can yell at, laugh, or better yet, laugh at Paul Pierce. Be like, yo, how many rings you got? It's like one. I got three. Come kiss them.
I really don't have a preference. I think it'd be fun to see him on the TNT squad.
Yeah,
I think,
but then they got to get rid of somebody.
That's a lot of fun, but I think he...
They got to get rid of somebody when they do that. I don't want them to get rid of anybody.
They could probably make it work with him too.
Nah,
but
it never worked. They got rid of Chris Webber when they got Shaq. They got to get rid of.
Well, they still have Chris Webber.
He just sideline. He doesn't do studio analyst stuff.
We'll
with
see.
TNT, I think TNT has such a great dynamic working with them that ESPN. It's still nice to watch games on ESPN, but TNT. I love the halftime, pregame, and postgame stuff because of the inside the NBA crew where ESPN. Yeah, they have a fine crew, but I'm not clearing my schedule to make sure that I can see it or recording it to watch it later.
I think it's just the banter back and forth.
Yeah, and Dwayne Wade, I think you need to have a very special type of personality to fit in with Charles Barkley, Shaq, and Kenny Smith. And I don't think that Dwayne Wade has that personality. Yeah. I think he has a good personality to be on TV, but I think he just fits better with ESPN. And it would be fun to see him and Paul Pierce and go back. And you got to
remember, like, Shaq balances the Chuck.
Yeah.
Like, I think, like, right now with it's Chauncey Billups and Paul Pierce.
Yep.
Chauncey's sort of that guy who was there, who did it first in 04. And then you got Dwayne Wade. If you get Dwayne Wade there, you got that balance between the guy who has three rings and the guy who has one big ring. And so, yeah. Like, oh, this ring was awesome, yada, yada, yada. Stuff like that.
But yeah, I think Dwayne Wade had the coolest farewell tour of all time. I really loved Kobe's. Oh, I loved a lot of these players, but I think Dwayne Wade got so much love from every team, every player. It's social media is such a big part of everything now compared to when Kobe retired. Social media was still a big part, but I think now Twitter
was not as big in 2016.
It's so big right now.
2016, Twitter was still
It was big. I just think now at this point,
by Salesforce.
I just think Dwayne Wade, the commercials he got, I think everything was so touching, and I think the love he got from every stadium. I didn't expect it to be like that. And then you got the guy who's on the total opposite end of the spectrum, Dirk, who announces he's retiring with like two games left and has like one or two tribute videos and that's about it. And Dirk it was a perfect way for him to go out too. So I just think it was fantastic to see the two of them go out in such a classy way. Sad to see Dwayne Wade not make the playoffs this year. And that takes me back to the Pistons being the most pathetic team in this playoffs and how the Heat should have had that spot and have Dwayne Wade have one last playoff run, even though they would have got bounced. But still, it would have been cool to see.
It would have been cool to see Dwayne Wade in the playoffs one more time, but there was something special about knowing Dwayne Wade is on his home court for the last time and
with a being triple able to really double. Appreciate it. First off, he hasn't had that many triple doubles in his career. It's not a guy that had a ton, but Dwayne Wade really just put on a show and went out in such a magical way, just like how Kobe went out with that one game, and we all
60
were
points
crying.
On 52 shots.
It's the same. It doesn't matter how you do
that
take,
game. That game, whenever
take
anyone
85
shot,
shots, bro. I don't
whenever
even care.
Anyone shot besides Kobe in that game, I was so upset.
Just take 100 shots. Who cares how many shots? And I really hope I see you in the big three at some point. I miss you.
Just no.
I just miss you. Three. I miss that play so much.
There's one season of him in the big three.
But yeah, thank you guys so much for listening to episode 50 of NBA Unwrapped. Such a great episode for us and celebrating such a great couple years that Corbin and I have had here with Christian and all the other family members of Unwrapped. It all started with me and Corbin trying to figure out a way to keep in touch and talk about the sport that we love. And it's turned into a team of 40 people, a website, a newsletter, partner podcasts, covering all types of sports. The level... Oh my God, I'm almost getting emotional. I'm telling you how much I love this and episode 50 with you, man. It's amazing. So I just wanted to take that time. I love all you guys and thank you for letting me have this platform. And thank you everyone for always giving us the support that you always do. We really love you, seriously. So remember to listen to us on podcast.com and the Apple Podcast app. You can also follow us on Twitter at NBA Unwrapped. You can follow me on Twitter at Perry Aston. Follow Corbin on Twitter at Corbin Unwrapped. Max over here at Party Max with an I. Follow our network Twitter page at Unwrapped Sports. And, of course, our website at unwrappedsports.com. So much great content to look at. Our partner podcast putting out all types of awesome stuff. Setting the pace. Shout out to you guys for your amazing guests that you had. We had to shout you guys out because you had Kevin Serafin right after Trevor Booker. So keep an eye out for them. They're on our website, too. Just so much love to give around. And with playoff time, it's such a great time for basketball. So I just want to thank you guys again. And we're going to catch you guys next time.
Yeah, thank you guys.
Awesome. See you next time.